Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Lexington, Kentucky, and was an All-American football player at the University of Kentucky. He was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1988, played center for them for 13 seasons, and was named to the NFL 1990s All-Decade Team. He was the first center to snap the football and lead on the sweep, and he was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2002. His name, Dermani Dawson, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the Hall of Fame center, arguably the greatest center to ever play in the NFL, of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Dermani Dawson. Dermani, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, Jack, thank you for having me on the show.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Yes. Well, you know, I was originally born, I was born in Lexington, Kentucky, and my mom and dad, Robert and Bonnie Dawson, still reside in Lexington. And, when I was playing ball, I was in Pittsburgh, and then I moved back to Lexington. And now I live in San Diego, sunny San Diego, California.
What's the biggest thing, Dermani, you learned from Dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
Well, you know, my mom and my dad, you know, what I learned from those guys is just, values that I've tried to, teach to my kids, and also I use them myself as well. You know, my mom, you know, she was a nurse, and my dad worked at IBM Corporation, and you know, those guys are just hard workers. I mean, they, hard work and dedication because, you know, my dad at one point, battled alcoholism and he overcame that. But, you know, perseverance is one of the things that I learned that you just can't, worry about and let things get you down because my dad, you know, struggled with alcoholism for a while and he overcame it. And my mom, during that time, you know, she had to do what she had to do. Work-wise, to raise four boys, and you know, both of those guys were just hard-working people, and you know, those are some of the things that I, learned from those guys. Don't allow things to get you down. Work hard and overcome obstacles, and that's what both my mom and my dad taught me.
What sports, Dermani, did you play as a kid?
The sports I played when I was a kid, I used to play baseball, and that was really, I played up until probably my 10th grade year. I also was on a track team for, elementary from field day all the way to middle school and high school. And also, I started out football. I played my 9th grade year at Leestown Middle School, and I didn't like it too much because really I was pretty much a blocking dummy. And I really didn't care too much for my first experience. So I decided to go ahead and play my junior year after my high school coach came up to me in the hallway and asked me to potentially go out for football. And so I played football in high school as well.
When people think of University of Kentucky, they think basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You're a Football Hall of Famer from the University of Kentucky. Talk about your college career at Kentucky.
Well, you know, I attended University of Kentucky. My first year was 1983, and I was redshirted my freshman year. I did not really start as far as a starter until my junior year at the University of Kentucky. And then I started my senior year, and then I played well enough to be invited to the blue-white game, also the Senior Bowl, and also the National Combine. And I really had no clue that, I was good enough to go to the NFL. It's just one of those things that just kind of happened where I played well, and I got a lot of attention from the scouts. And once I went to the National Combine and also, played in the All-Star games, then that's when I kind of realized that, okay, well, this could be real. And, you know, things just kind of fell into place. And, but, you know, I had a great, you know, college experience. And, you know, college is not for everyone, but I really kind of embraced, you know, the college lifestyle and just the whole experience of being a college student or student athlete at University of Kentucky. And, you know, those were some of the greatest years of my life. That I kind of reflect back on, you know, some of the friendships that you make with your former teammates. And we still try to stay in touch. And I go back for alumni weekends. And, you know, some of the guys that I play ball with as well, I mean, we're still good friends to this day, and some I've lost touch with. But, you know, it was a great experience at the University of Kentucky.
The 1988 NFL draft in the second round, the 44th pick, the Steelers choose you.
Yeah.
How did you find out, and what were your first thoughts?
Well, you know, of course, draft day, everybody's looking at television, especially when you're ranked up there. You know, and I didn't know exactly where I was going to go, but I knew that I had an interest, that some of the teams had an interest in me. But I was at home with my mom and dad and those guys when the draft was going on. And at that time, they had 12 rounds in the draft. So the first day, I want to say it was the first through the third round. And, you know, I had a little inkling that maybe I was going to go in the first round because I knew that the Giants liked me as a player. But I ended up going in the second round to the Steelers, like you said, the 44th pick. And you're talking about somebody being excited. Because, I mean, that really exceeded my expectations to be drafted in the second round.
Other than snapping the ball, Dermani, what does a center do in football?
Well, you know, I mean, the primary responsibility for the center, I mean, we're right in the middle of the action. We can see both sides of the defense. And, you know, not every team puts the onus on the center to make the calls, but a vast majority of the centers in the NFL and college as well, you know, you can see both sides of the defense. So you can make adjustments for run blocking, and also passing situations, mainly in the third down situations, you know, where you have specialty protections where you have to make adjustments based on the set of the defense. And that's the primary responsibility for the center.
You're the 12th center in NFL history to enter the Football Hall of Fame, and you're the first center who would snap the ball and then literally lead on the sweep. How did you figure out to do that? And most importantly, how did you ever do that?
Well, you know, Jack, I've always been, you know, very athletic, and that kind of came about in 1992, Bill Cowher's first year in training camp. And Ron Earhart was the offensive coordinator that Bill Cowher hired in 1992, his first year. And we just happened to be in training camp, and I can't remember who we were preparing for. I think it was a preseason game, or we were preparing for like the first game of the year, which we would kind of take a day to kind of work on, you know, the game plan for the first official game. But we were just in practice, and because the defenses were doing something kind of weird where they were kind of consuming both the guard and the center, and we couldn't get up to the second level on the linebackers. So I just told Ron and those guys, I said, Ron, I said, look, I'm fast enough to snap the ball and, you know, give a false or live call so I can communicate with the front side guard to let those guys know that I'm going to potentially snap it and pull based on the set of the defense. So we started to do that and practice it and, you know, run it in practice. And, you know, coaching those guys loved it so much, you know, we start incorporating that into our offensive scheme. And then they would allow me, give me the flexibility to make the calls as long as myself and, you know, the linemen, we all worked out the calls to make sure everybody was on the same page. And then they allowed me to do that. And it was so successful that we, you know, it was hard to kind of stop our running game. And that was kind of our forte throughout my career.
Ray Didinger, a longtime writer, says, if Jerome Bettis was the bus, then Dawson was the easy pass. And Bill Cowher, your head coach, said, quote, to me, Dermani was the best athlete to ever play that position. He was very powerful and explosive, just a rare combination of quickness, explosion, and he was a very dependable player. The guy hardly ever missed a game. He redefined the center position. We're talking to Damarney Dawson, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Damarney Dawson, who was named to the NFL 1990s All-Decade Team and was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2012. Damarney, the definition of a good day for an offensive lineman is where the TV play-by-play man never mentions your name. That doesn't sound fair.
Well, you know, I always tell people that, you know, offensive linemen don't have any immeasurable stats except for offsides and holding. So when your name is called, you know it's not good. And so, you know, you don't like to have your name called out on the PA system, you know, especially in a critical situation, you know, holding or clipping. Yeah, that's one thing you don't want to happen throughout the course of a game. But it happens. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just you can't help it sometimes. But, yeah, you never like to hear your name called on that PA system.
When you got into the Football Hall of Fame, your induction speech, you mentioned one teammate in particular. And this was a legend that you replaced.
Yes.
The late, great center, Mike Webster.
Yes.
Talk to us about Mike Webster.
Well, you know, I used to, you know, for me, I've always been one of those guys who I love to come in early to the stadium, you know, whether I was in college or in the pros. But I would always get into the weight room early in the morning to make sure I got a lift in to kind of keep your body in shape. And then, of course, you have meetings and film you would have to look at. And so we would look at it on our own in the morning before we had our team meeting. You know, but Mike, you know, I had the pleasure of playing with him my rookie year and starting beside him my rookie year as well. You know, Mike was just one of those guys that, you know, he was in his 15th season, and Mike would be in the weight room earlier than I would and, you know, be working out and be in the film room watching film. But I used to just kind of look at Mike and ask him, you know, Mike was in his 15th season, and, you know, he would write down everything the coach said, even though he probably knew, you know, the offensive scheme better than the coaches and all the calls, but he always wrote everything down. And he was always first in line in practice, and he kind of led by example. And when Mike went to Kansas City after the 88 season, you know, I used to try to emulate some of the things that Mike, you know, and Mike and I talked about, and also some of the things he did, you know, because really it's all about, you know, leadership. And, you know, Mike was a great example of, you know, work ethic and leadership and, you know, commitment to, you know, bettering himself, you know, even in his 15th season, you know, and you don't rest on your laurels. And that's one of the things that I learned from Mike is work ethic and how to be a professional. And, you know, whether it was verbally, you know, Mike and I talked about certain issues, but it was just the way he carried himself throughout practice. And, you know, and a lot of things go unsaid that you see a guy and you know he's a leader because of his actions. And those are one of the things that I tried to emulate when Mike left to go to Kansas City, when I was named a starter. And, you know, it was I always credit Mike with a lot of my success because I wanted to kind of, you know, shape myself in the same light as Mike in his work ethic. And, you know, and when people see you working at a certain level and being a, you know, that's leadership. And, you know, and that's most important. And that's one of the things that I learned from Mike.
In the 90s, Damarney, everybody in America wanted to be like Mike, and it was Michael Jordan. You wanted to be like Mike Webster.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, regularly, you would look up when you got ready to snap the ball, and there was this nose tackle, anywhere from 325 pounds to 350. And there was a guy with the Packers, Gilbert Brown, who I think was from Detroit. He was so big, he was Detroit. Talk about nose tackles and what those battles were like.
Well, I tell you what, you know, when you go against, and every nose tackle you go against based on the scheme of the defense is different, and you have to kind of customize your game based on their abilities and also your running, you know, whatever plays you're running offensively, you know, for your team. You know, it's tough. Michael Dean Perry, Jerry Ball, I tell you, my rookie year or my second year starting at center, the first preseason game was against Detroit, in Detroit. And Jerry Ball was a perennial Pro Bowler nose guard. And I tell you what, we had the trapping scheme of offense in 1988 or 89. And I tell you what, boy, he gave me fits the first half. And I was like, my goodness, can I block this guy? Do I need to go back to guard? He had me questioning myself and my abilities. But, you know, after the second half, you know, I kind of settled down and, you know, did much better. But, you know, that was my first real experience as a starting center against a perennial Pro Bowl nose guard. But, you know, every nose guard is totally different. But, you know, those guys are made, or their main job is to stop the run and plug up the middle. And so you have to pretty much, you know, customize your game based on who you're playing. But it's a tough thing because you got a guy right there. You're at a disadvantage at a center position because you have to snap the ball. You're looking around, making adjustments. You have to listen to the quarterback. You're making calls. You have to listen to the other offensive lineman and the quarterback. So you're at a disadvantage. And, you know, as soon as you snap the ball, you have one hand already gone, snapping the ball to the quarterback. So that's why you have to be quick and kind of get that secondary hand up, because that's your most valuable asset, is keeping that separation from the nose guard, because it's tough enough, you know, being at a disadvantage snapping the ball.
Let's go back to January 28th, 1996. Super Bowl 30, the Steelers against the Cowboys. Tell us about that experience.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, being in the Super Bowl 30 was just a phenomenal experience. You know, it's so tough just to make it to the Super Bowl because it's just such a long season and you have injuries, and you just never know if you're going to make it to that point. And for us in Pittsburgh, you know, to make the playoffs, it was just like a given every year. But to make the Super Bowl, you know, that is the pinnacle of a player's career, you know, because that's what your goal is each and every year. And that's what every team's goal is, to make it to the Super Bowl. But, you know, it was a great experience. I mean, it's just the biggest show in town, and, you know, just the media hype that goes along with it, and knowing that you're going to be on the center stage and every eye is going to be watching you. You know, it's a special time to, you know, to experience just the whole experience, that whole entire week during the Super Bowl in Phoenix. It was a great experience. I mean, I know even though we didn't win and we lost, but you know, Dallas, you know, they did what they had to do to beat us. But it was a great experience, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Hall of Fame cornerback Rod Woodson, a teammate, says, "I don't know if he was the first center to snap the football and lead on the sweep, but I've never seen a center do it as good. The guy was a tremendous athlete, the strongest and probably most athletic offensive lineman I've ever seen." Damani Dawson. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Damani Dawson, who earned the name Dirt for the way he would try to grind defenders into the ground. But in contrast, his friendly off-field demeanor led to a second name, Ned Flanders, after the annoyingly cheerful character from The Simpsons. Let's go to February 4th, 2012. Steve Perry gets up in front of a microphone, president of Football Hall of Fame, and he names six new Hall of Famers. And one of them is Damani Dawson. Where were you, and what were your first few thoughts?
Well, you know, when I was looking at the NFL Network, the announcement show for the Hall of Fame, because I knew I was a finalist, and I was down to the top 10. You know, I was here in San Diego at my house, and I was sitting here on the couch. Well, usually the process is where they call you ahead of time to let you know that you were selected. So I thought that, you know, once they had named the top 10, that, you know, it was pretty much, you know, I didn't receive a phone call, so I didn't think I made it. So I was going to go hit golf balls. And, you know, then my girlfriend said, no, turn the TV back on, turn the TV back on. And so I guess after we turned the TV back on and the NFL Network came on and they said, here are the finalists, you know, and then Jack Butler and then myself was named second. I was pretty much in shock. I was like, holy moly, I can't believe it. You know, I made it. And, you know, I was just elated. But after that, you know, you kind of surreal because really you don't believe it. And then all of a sudden, you know, your phone, your phone is going crazy. You're getting all these texts. And I got to the point where, you know, the NFL called me or the NFL Network or the Hall of Fame called me, actually, saying that I was selected. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm looking at the show. But my phone was going off so much that I had so much information, you know, so much information, phone calls and texts coming in, that when I was on the phone and going to do the live interview on the air with the NFL Network, my phone went out. So I had to try to call the Hall of Fame back on the landline in order to talk to those guys and do the interview. But it was kind of surreal, Jack, you know, just knowing that, you know, you're in this elite group, a very special group of guys. And it's just, I mean, I still, to this day, I mean, I really don't consider myself, it really doesn't change who you are. You know, it's the ultimate accolade for us being enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And, you know, and that's a great accomplishment. And I am very blessed. And, you know, I don't take it for granted. And along with being elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you know, comes a lot of other responsibilities as well as far as carrying yourself, you know, as a Hall of Famer. And when I was at the Super Bowl last year after the announcement, Floyd Little got up and spoke about the responsibility that goes along with being a Hall of Famer, the way you carry yourself, the way that you give back to the community. He said, even on a bad day, if you're having a bad day, he says, put that gold jacket on. He said, you'll feel much better knowing that you're in that special group. And it is truly an honor. It's really an honor.
You can never be cut. You can never be traded.
No.
You never get paid. But, okay, let's jump 6 months ahead to August 4th, 2012, in Canton, the actual induction ceremonies. And each Hall of Famer gets to choose who they want to present them.
Yeah.
So you had your Hall of Fame coach, Chuck Knoll. You had your longtime future Hall of Fame coach, Bill Cowher. You could have had one of the Rooney family members. But instead, you have a man named Steve Parker. Who is he and why?
Well, you know, I did have some choices as far as who was going to introduce me. But I just thought it was fitting that Steve Parker be my presenter, because Steve Parker was, you know, instrumental in getting me to go out for football. Because after my first experience of playing football, my ninth grade year, I wasn't really going to play anymore. And I just remember coming out of biology class my junior year. I came out into the hallway, and Coach Parker came up to me and said, sir, can I help you? And I said, well, Coach, I said, I'm a student here. And he said, what? He said, where have you been all my life? He put his hands on my shoulder and just said, where have you been all my life? And so, you know, he didn't know too much about me. He knew that I was on a track team after he had met me. And two of my track teammates, Mark Logan and Cornell Burbage, you know, he talked to those guys and tried to get me to go out for football. So, you know, I just thought it was fitting that, you know, Coach Parker, you know, be my presenter, because he was instrumental in, you know, just identifying me and then also getting two of my teammates that were on the track team with me to get me to go out for football. And, you know, Coach Parker is just a great guy. You know, I've been knowing him for, you know, quite a few years once I met him, because I think that was his first year at Bryan Station Senior High School in 1981, I think it was. He was just hired, you know, he was 20-something years old, and he was a football coach. So I just thought it was fitting that Coach Parker, since he was the one instrumental in getting me to go out for football, that he be my presenter for the Hall of Fame.
During your induction speech, and I quote, you say, I hope today to share one lesson from my life with young people on the field and off. The essence of it is this. Do everything with a purpose. Live, act, play, work with a purpose, with a passion, and most importantly, with honor. Why'd you say that?
Well, you know, because I think that, you know, sometimes we are kind of, you know, our life is kind of distorted sometimes, you know, and I think we kind of chase dreams. But, you know, I think anything you do, you have to do with a purpose because therefore it has more meaning. And then also you have to have a passion for it as well. You know, because if you don't enjoy what you do in life, you're never going to be fulfilled and happy. You can chase dollars, you know, but that always doesn't equate to happiness. And I think that you have to do things, you know, with a purpose. And also it has to mean something to you, and you have to have a passion for it. You know, for me, I think that, you know, sometimes we just kind of go through life, and we're not happy. But, you know, if you do have a purpose and you want to accomplish something or help people, you know, that's what it's all about. And, you know, that's why I said that in my speech, because I think that that's just a true statement. I think, you know, with that comes more happiness. If you have a purpose, you know, for what you do in life and trying to be the best person you can be, you know, that's why I said that in my Hall of Fame speech.
We're talking to Damani Dawson, who played 13 seasons at center for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Damani, why has the Steeler organization been so successful these last 40 years?
Well, you know, I always think that success comes from, you know, stability and also leadership. You know, if you look at the Steeler organization throughout the years, you know, they've only had so many coaches, you know, throughout their whole existence. And, you know, that's a testament to the Steeler organization because they allow, you know, with the leadership of the Rooney family and the ownership group, you know, those guys allow, you know, the head coach to do his thing and also personnel, the front office to do their things. And, you know, they're not intrusive. You know, I'm sure they have, you know, say about it, but it's just the stability of the Steeler organization. And also, you know, the big thing about the Steelers as well is that, you know, they really give back to the community. You know, they have the players. That's something when you first come to Pittsburgh that you understand that not only do you represent yourself, you represent the city of Pittsburgh, you represent the Steeler organization. And I just think because they just have it all together, and whatever formula they have used throughout their existence, you know, it's been successful. But it really starts at leadership and stability, and that's truly what I believe. And the way that the Steeler organization and the Rooney family, the way they treat the players, the coaches, it's so much like a family atmosphere in Pittsburgh and the Steeler organization. And I think that's the reason why they've had so much success throughout their whole history.
We're talking to Damani Dawson, arguably the greatest center in the history of the NFL. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Damani Dawson, who played for the Steelers for 13 years at center and redefined the position. Damani, since 1969, the Steelers have had three head coaches. Chuck Noll for 23 years, Bill Collar for 15, and now Mike Tomlin for 6 and counting. We look at the Lions, and they've got a new coach every other year, it seems. What's the key to that continuity? Why has Pittsburgh stuck with the same?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, like I was speaking once before about the success of the Steelers, I think it just comes from the leadership of the Steelers and the Rooney family and the way they treat their coaches. You know, like I said, I had the pleasure of playing with Chuck Noll for 4 years. And then Bill Cowher for 9. And now Mike has taken over, and Mike's doing a phenomenal job. But I just think that, you know, they hire, you know, quality individuals that have a passion for the game, and they allow those guys to coach the way they see fit. And it's just been a great combination. And like I said, I can't say enough about the Rooney family and also the Steel organization. And I don't know how they do it, but whatever they've been doing, it's been working extremely well. But it just stems from the leadership of the Rooney family.
Dermani, I had the pleasure of meeting you a little more than a month ago on a Friday luncheon in New Orleans for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you know, where they're raising money for the indigent Hall of Famers and widows. And I think there were 28 Hall of Famers there and a lot of guests. And watching you, you went around searching out the guest and introducing yourself to the guest. It was almost like they were the Hall of Famers and you were the common person. Why?
Well, you know, I think, anytime you're at any function, I know that, and this may be just my personality, but, you know, I've always been one of those people that I've always introduced myself, you know, because whether they know who you are or not, I think you still should introduce yourself to whoever's sitting at the table or just a guest in general, you know, just when you're outstanding and just kind of mingling. I just think that's important to kind of introduce yourself and not just take for granted that people know who you are because of you may have played football. That doesn't mean anything to me. I think, you know, as just being a decent person, I think you should introduce yourself to other people who are there attending the event because, you know, that helps enhance, their experience, for whatever event you're attending. And I've just always been that way. I introduce myself to everybody, and I think it's important also, because if I'm sitting at a table with, say, 8 or 9 guests, and I would introduce myself, you know, I'm interacting with those guys, I'm talking, I do everything. I mean, that's just the way I was raised.
A good friend of mine is Tim McCormick, went to Michigan Center in basketball, played in the NBA for a dozen years, and now he's an ESPN basketball commentator. And he told me the other day that the greatest challenge in sports is to manage prosperity. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, and I think, managing prosperity is a thing that, some people have the gift of it and some people don't. Some people don't know how to handle prosperity. But I think a lot of that comes from your upbringing as well, you know, and the values that your parents taught you. And, you can learn, how to handle prosperity and success, through life experiences. But, you know, it can be tough. You know, I think if, you know, I don't know, it's just so tough to, you know, because everybody is totally different how they handle, you know, success and failure. But a vast majority of guys, I think some do handle it well, but I think you have to surround yourself with good people. You know, I think that's the key to handling, prosperity as well as failure. And I think, you know, any time you experience, down times in your life, there's always going to be a brighter day. And everybody handles it totally different. But, you know, for myself, I just kind of think about, you know, my parents and some of the obstacles they overcame. And, you know, they taught me well. And not just my mom and my dad, but, you know, my aunts and my uncles as well. Those guys were big influences on, you know, the person I am today growing up. And I was able to handle it, pretty well. But, you know, not everybody handles prosperity. You know, a lot of people, let it go to their heads. And sometimes they think they're larger than what they really are. That's a difficult thing. But, you know, I think it's an individual, attribute that certain people have that they handle it very well and some people don't.
When you scout for the Steelers and you're watching linemen, how can you figure out if somebody's a good lineman or if somebody's a great lineman?
Well, that's kind of hard to define as well because some guys take a little bit longer to mature as offensive linemen because, the mental aspect of the game is the most important. I think for a lineman to be extremely great. I think, you know, you have to have that athleticism, but also you have to have the work ethic. And there's a fine line that defines a great one and an average offensive lineman. You know, it's just a tough thing to really define. But you know, because I mean, you can have a guy who's having a phenomenal year, but I think consistency, that is the key. Consistency is the key, and dependability. But yeah, it's a fine line between a great offensive lineman and an average offensive lineman. And you know, a lot of that comes with leadership, consistency. Those are some of the attributes that you look for, and how he handles adversity as well. Adverse situations. All those things culminate into defining what is a great lineman as opposed to an average lineman.
As our time winds down this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Well, my advice to young listeners is, it's just, just live life and, set goals for yourself. I think it's very important for young people to set goals, to kind of have a blueprint of what they want to do in life and how they want to go about reaching that goal, about what it is they want to do in life. And also, once you decide what you want to do in life, doing it to the fullest and making sure that you're happy. Do it with integrity, be totally dedicated to it. You're going to have your ups and downs, but you can always overcome adversity and just never give up.
Germani Dawson, you are a Hall of Fame football player, but more importantly, you're a Hall of Famer in life. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.
Believe in yourself.